Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 16 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinson, discuss whatever comes to mind time after time here on Comic Timing. Today's episode focuses on violence in comics and whether or not comic books are still for kids. With the gritty and mature themes found in some of today's biggest books, has the genre outgrown children in favor of older readers? To discuss the issue, Matt Summer and Lord Shaper himself, Damian Smith, stop on by, and Damian premieres his brand new segment, Rogues Gallery. Here now, Comic Timing.
Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 16 of Comic Timing. We escaped the 1-5 mark and are now on to the second half of the 10s. Episode 16 is ready to go here, and I am joined, as always, by my new partner, as it were, the man from the land of beer. He is Matt S.
All right, here we go, big 2-0.
Oh, yeah. Not yet, man.
Well, we're counting down.
Exactly, yeah. There we go. And joining us for the first time, he is an affiliate of the show with his lordshaper.com. That is The Furnace, and he is the lord of all shapers. He is Damian Smith.
How are you doing, guys?
Doing pretty well. Glad to be graced with an Australian accent for the first time on the show.
Okay, it still doesn't sound any different to me, but...
Yeah, he's probably baffled by your Brooklyn accent.
Exactly.
Oh, I've been listening to Dick DiPartolo, so you get that there.
Oh, man.
All right.
Hey, to me, I have no accent, but to everybody, nobody has any accent. And then it's the people outside of that that then say, oh, yes, I can tell you have your Brooklyn drawl going on. So anyway, we're all gathered here today for the wedding of, okay, maybe not. We're talking about violence in comics this week. And, well, here is the main topic, as was posted on the Comic Timing forums last night. The distinction between comic books for mature audiences and those for everyone has blurred a bit over the past few years. Are comics not for kids anymore? Is violence in comics on the rise? What are the Max and Vertigo lines? Do they give comics a bad rap for being violent and mature themed, or is it simply another genre in the wide world of comic books? Is there a line you don't want comic books to cross? Speak your mind, folks. Well, to start things off here, I guess the general question would probably be the best way to do that, and I'll start it off with Matt. Matt, do you feel comic books are too violent these days?
You know what? This, like I said, I'm sure we're going to get into this a lot as we go along. You know, I'm traditionally the cranky old man on here, so of course I'm going to say yes. They are too violent, and I think the thing is, and this all ties into the fact that the market, who the comics are aimed at, is a lot different now than it used to be. So you have, you know, everyone always hears a story, like the average comic age, comic readers in their 20s or in their 30s or what have you. And the young kids, the teens, they're not interested in American comics anymore. They're all off with their manga volumes. So, you know, what the hell? I guess DC and Marvel figure that this is their audience and this is who they need to start writing for.
I guess I could sort of see where you're coming from there, but, well, what, do you think the teenagers just see more happiness inside of manga, and that's why they're going towards it?
Well, that's probably enough stuff for a whole other show, to tell you the truth, but I'm not really sure what it is. I think something happened, because I started, you know, and I'll ask you how you got started, but, you know, I started collecting comics when I was 14 years old. This is way back in 1984.
Wow. Actually. Hey, you want to feel old? A year before I was born.
I don't care.
A year after. I was kidding. I was born in 84, so.
Well, I mean, the point of that is just that, I came in, my first year of comic collecting saw a lot of big, kind of more mature titles like Dark Knight Returns, Watchmen, I smacked right down in the middle of Crisis on Infinite Earths. I saw a lot of stuff that was a little more adult-oriented. Comics just kind of starting to shake out of that whole, you know, they're not just for kids anymore kind of thing. You know, I don't know what happened after that. Like, the next generation after me that you belong to, I suppose, just seems to have not really caught that same train that the older folks have. So, I mean, what got you started in the comics? Do you have any friends that were reading comics at the time?
You know, it wasn't exactly the friends. It was actually more the animated series that were on TV at the time. I was a huge fan of the X-Men animated series, and I was a huge fan of the Spider-Man animated series, and that sort of led me to the line of X-Men comics and Spider-Man comics, and from there I sort of got my in and basically ended up at the comic shop at least once a week. I had a comic place that was actually right down the street from me, which helped out a lot because there was a movie theater that I used to go to called the Kingsway, which is actually now a Walgreens, which I'm still pissed about. So you go from great movie theater to Walgreens. Jeez, I'm getting old, but
they're everywhere.
Exactly.
And it happens over you too. Don't worry about it.
I'm glad it's not just me, Damien. I'm glad it's not just me. And right next to it was AAA Comics and Cards, which later became Acme. And they moved down the street from where they originally were, right next to the movie theater. They moved down the street from there, and I would just basically go there every week and, you know, pick up random comics. And my first comic that I can remember was Uncanny X-Men number 300, which I bought because of the shiny cover. and it was a
actually
genre.
I've still got some shiny covers that are actually still sealed that I didn't even know what the comic was and I bought.
And that's a episode that we did a couple of episodes back right there. So
yeah, Ian was a little too much of a youngster to remember those heady days, but Damien and I know
there,
the giddy thrill of purchasing 5 copies of X-Force #1.
Oh, come on,
oh,
dude.
Yes.
Hey, we had a whole episode about the 90s with Derek Coward and David Price a couple episodes back. It was all about the 90s, and I talked about my first comic being Uncanny X-Men number 300 with John Romita Jr. and the shiny cover. It wasn't really the violence that got me in. It was the wonder, which I guess I am in the minority these days. I don't know. But, Damien, how about you? I mean, what do you think about violence in comics?
Well, I started off with, like, a lot of the GI combats and stuff like that from many, many years ago, and sort of was picking up bits and pieces from there. But after that, like, I stepped out of it and came back into it, and I got wrapped right up in the Vertigo stuff. So this was probably towards the end of the 80s, I was picking up a lot of stuff that became the Vertigo type stuff, the Hellblazers and Grendels and all that, and that's what really caught me. So, like, it's not stuff that I'll let my son listen to. Read even.
No. You don't let your son listen to this podcast. You don't let your son read comic books. There you go.
Oh, no, I dug out all my old Batman animated series comics, and he's got them. He's only 2.5, so he just goes through pointing out Batman. But, any of the other stuff, all the Grendel stuff and all that, they're sort of kept out of his reach, so he doesn't want to look at them. So,
you know,
there is stuff out for both.
I don't want to kind of come across as being like, comics, all comics should be for all ages. I mean, in the same way, you know, during the 90s, I really ventured more into the whole alternative comics, independent comics, and, you know, I was in my early 20s, and that was obviously more interesting to me. At the time, I kind of felt like I was getting a little too old for a lot of superhero comics that were coming out at the time. I felt like I'd seen it all before, and the comics nowadays, these days, are changing those mainstream superhero books, trying to keep those 20-something, 30-something readers' interest, where the same old books from days past perhaps won't.
That's the thing. With the comic book fans that are trying to keep their interest going, obviously they're going to go for the more mature comic books, but should there be as many for all ages comic books as there are mature comic books? Because it seems like there's a lot more mature than anything these days.
Well, that's kind of where my problems lie with what's going on right now, is that if you think about it, since the late 30s, even up until when I kind of started collecting, up until the mid-80s, parents would have no worry about picking up any of the mainstream Marvel or DC books to give to their kids of any age. It just wasn't an issue because, at the time, they were still more interested in appealing to the younger audience. They were still much more under the sway of the Comics Code Authority, that they wanted to make sure that they weren't doing anything that was, bad or naughty because they could get themselves into trouble.
Yeah.
But, again, this all ties in sort of to the direct market and everything else, too, because once comics started getting taken off the newsstand, once they started, you know, becoming kind of this specialty item that appealed to older comic fans, it started to go a little darker direction. My biggest, again, I'm kind of shocked right now, because you can pick up, you know, any of the mainstream Marvel or DC books right now. Superman in the 60s, in the Silver Age, used to be aimed at, like 8-year-olds. And so that's why we had all this crazy-ass stuff with, you know, 18 different flavors of kryptonite and all these really wacky things and super pets and the crazy monkeys and whatever. And I'm not saying that we need to go back to that, but the problem is nowadays, you know, you pick up a Superman or a Batman or a Wonder Woman, and you see Wonder Woman killing a guy.
Yeah, but even if you go back to some of the early Batmans, probably in the first 3 issues that they had Batman in Detective, he killed 2 people.
Well, I won't disagree with that, but again, that's back in the 30s when these things first came out. Again, it was sort of a different audience. Yeah. It was aimed more at the pulp magazine reader and a little more, you know, anything goes kind of back.
Watch out
time.
Or Papa Spank.
Okay.
Well, that is the line that basically explains that entire pulp era of Batman to me. In those early issues, he could get away with saying things like that. He could get away with killing people. He can get away with shooting a gun off. And these
smoking
days, the very
I must have missed that one. Those Detective 79, where Batman rolls a fat one.
Oh, God. I have such bad images in my head right now. But, yeah, I mean, obviously it was a very different Batman back then.
You know, we saw a swing. And again, I think that we kind of saw this swing of when comics first came out there, maybe, you know, no one really knew what was going on and things were kind of crazy. And we had the whole, you know, like EC comics were obviously aimed at more adult readers. After that whole 50s witch hunt, in the United States with comics, we have much more, you know, kind of a shift in who comics were being produced for, and especially the superhero titles definitely were aimed at more of a younger audience, especially the DC stuff. Now, Stan Lee came along in the 60s at Marvel, and part of why they were so successful is because they kind of upped the age range to the teens, to the young college age kids, and wrote a little more of a mature storyline.
Well, Damian, I mean, well, you're a fan of the villains, obviously, as we'll get into later on in the podcast, obviously.
Yep.
What is it that draws you to the villains? I mean, well, they're obviously the most violent of the bunch.
I've found them to be a bit more interesting than some of the other characters. Like, you know, I know people are going to hate me for it, but I'm not a fan of Superman whatsoever. But people like Lex Luthor, you know, that's what would get me interested in reading it, because, you know, he's more interesting to me, you know, for what he can get away with.
Okay. And tying into what Matt said, I mean, do you feel they get more like mature storylines than the actual main characters of the book? I mean, is that something that they can get away with because they're villains?
Yeah, I think they can, because they can push the limits just that bit more.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you said, the good guy has to be the good guy. Well, they used to have to be the good guy. And the bad guy is always free to be evil, nasty, kill people, do whatever they can. You know, I think it's kind of interesting that both Marvel and DC through the years, they've always had kind of like villain starring books.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the Joker's starring in his own book, or the Marvel supervillain team-up kind of books, where the villains are obviously the main character. So that's kind of interesting. Yeah. I don't know. Obviously, there's an appeal there.
Well, I mean, this is something that's actually mentioned a lot on the Raging Bullets podcast, and it's that, you know, it takes a good villain for there to be a good hero. And obviously, if the villain's good enough, he's going to warrant his own title. But at the same time, you're certainly going to be getting much more of a mature audience title there. I mean, Deathstroke had his own title for a while. Even Deadshot had his own title for a while. And both of those actually sold pretty well back in the day. And then you've got the
But don't forget Venom there, too.
Oh, well, Venom... well, see, that's the thing. Is Venom a hero, or is he something else these days? I don't even know, because when he had his...
Deathstroke himself.
That's true, yeah.
But we've always had that. I mean, the Punisher, let's look at a character like that, you know, a guy who has guns that kills people, you know?
And
how heroic can you get with that kind of character? But they've still managed to portray him as a heroic figure.
Well, that's the sort of thing also. Like, I mean, these days you certainly see that a lot more than ever, as sort of the anti-hero being the head of a book, like something like a Hitman or a Punisher, where
or the Darkness,
where you'll see a guy who, you know, literally, you know, you're not going to see him hanging out with Superman. You're not going to see him hanging out with Spider-Man. Well, except for every now and then, Punisher was hanging out with Spider-Man, but still, most of the time, they're on the opposite side of the law, and yet you're still getting rid of the villains. Only there is just a very different type of justice than what most of the other heroes have.
No, I was just thinking also the Hulk would also fit into that sort of category as
sure.
well. Where,
yeah, no, definitely, yeah. Without a doubt. He's fell into that role plenty of times, and even when he was on the Avengers, you know, he'd be running off and going on his own rampages. So, what were you going to say, Matt?
Just wanted to bring this back to me, because really, obviously the 90s was the grim and gritty decade, so we did see a lot of kind of more violence and mature kind of things pop up. And like I said before, you know, I like the idea of the different imprints. Like, I like the idea of the Vertigo imprint, because that, you know, you look at that, and it's a something that just tells you, you know, these are aimed at a more mature audience. These are going to be dealing with more adult subject matter. And it, you know, it's kind of a, you know, it's like a wall between the mainstream kind of books and the ones that are more aimed at adults. And then Marvel did the same thing with their Max line, which was a little more confusing to me, because there was a lot of crossover with mainstream characters in those adult books. So it was a little more gray area there with some of the stuff that happened at Marvel, but still, even so, you know, there's a book that you know where you stand, kind of what's going on. Now,
yeah.
One of the things that I've been kind of grumpy about the last couple years really started, and, you know, don't get me wrong, a great story. You know, I really liked it as a standalone story, but you look at something like Identity Crisis in DC that basically had some really kind of nasty, dark, horrible things happening to and being done by the main heroes of the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, to me, is sort of when you're like, you know, like I said, it's a great story, and I'm 35 years old, and I enjoy dark and grim and gritty stuff. But again, I'm just wondering, you know, are we losing a generation of readers here that can't enjoy these main superhero books anymore because they're being written for adults?
Well, yeah, and even by mentioning Identity Crisis, you have to mention one of the major scenes in Infinite Crisis with Superboy ripping off the arm of a member of the Teen Titans.
Oh, man, don't get me started on that book. That whole those seven issues were just, I mean, you got Black Adam putting his fist through somebody's face, you got Panther's head getting blown off. I mean, you just it's nonstop carnage, and it's not just kind of Crisis on Infinite Earths, there was a lot of deaths, but it was more sort of like, oh no, he's crushed under rubble, and then they pull him up, and his, you know, nice and pristine dead body is sitting there. But I mean, we're getting just like graphic stuff, and especially, you know, you're gonna play that clip that you had, where you talked to Phil Jimenez, and that was the thing that really kind of kickstarted it off for me, where I was like, oh man, I don't know what the hell they're doing anymore, but totally like graphic death and dismemberment of Ted Kord, Blue Beetle, in the prelude to Infinite Crisis, really kind of crossed the line to me, because it was almost like gratuitous. Like, oh, here's his brain splatter. Okay. Oh,
yeah.
Here's his body being thrown in the incinerator. You know, it's like, how far can you go with this? I mean, that was a little bit crossing the line, and then Infinite Crisis itself was, you know, a lot of kind of B and C-list characters getting brutally killed.
Pretty much, and I mean, there's really no other way to describe it, because, well, that's what Identity Crisis was, and that's what Infinite Crisis was, too. I mean, in Identity Crisis, you have Captain Boomerang and Tim Drake's father, you know, squaring off, and, you know, both of them end up on the floor in a pool of blood, and it's the sort of thing that you certainly would have never seen back in the days of the comic code being, you know, as strong as it was back in the day. And, I mean, the comic code barely even exists anymore, but before we get into that, actually, since you brought it up, this is where I'm going to drop in the clip that I actually did about a year or so ago for Brooklyn College Radio, my old college, and ignore the Brooklyn College Radio at the end because, well, that's what the original clip was from. I have a clip here about whether or not comics are still for kids, and I actually had an interview with a friend of mine, Brian Bradientos, who you've actually heard in the Geek Speak podcast a couple times, one of my local comic book shop owners, Hank Kwan, who owns Bulletproof Comics here in Brooklyn, and a couple of different segments from Phil Jimenez for, at the time, Road for Infinite Crisis. And, well, he does actually touch on why he did that scene the way he did. So actually, here is, it's about a 6-minute segment, and then we'll get back to the actual conversation. Here is that segment on comic books not being for kids anymore.
Hi. My name is Ian Levenstein, and, I'm a comic geek. No, seriously. No, wait, no, I'm not. Yeah, I'm a comic geek. Not quite a nerd, but definitely at least a geek. I've been collecting comic books since the ripe old age of 13, and since then, yeah, basically seen it all. You know, the usual. Clones, deaths, resurrections, flaming skullheads riding motorcycles while battling demons. You get the idea. And now that I'm 21, well, the comic book addiction remains, but the comics themselves have changed. They've evolved into something different, something more, mature and vulgar. Certainly not the same thing I got into when I was 13. But it brings up an interesting question. Are comic books still for kids, or are they more for the almost adult type, like me? My buddy Brian Bariantos has been a comic book nut as long as I have, and possibly even a bit longer. 13 years he's been collecting now, and he notices a bit of the change, too, from the 90s until now. Back in the day, comics were all about the coolness factor. Creators like Todd McFarlane, who created Spawn for Image Comics, and Rob Liefeld, who made Cable for Marvel, made characters basically for their look alone.
In the 90s, I think everyone was trying to make all the characters more badass. I think now it's just that they have more freedom and just let their characters be themselves, you know. You're not going to see a brooding Peter Parker or a brooding Kyle Rayner, you know, which is, I think, is a good thing.
With the increase in emphasis on the characters, comic book readers saw definite changes in their weekly comics. While regaining favorite characters that were lost to marketing ploys, other characters changed drastically, maturing their attitude and their personality for a different age group. But according to Hank Kwan, who has worked at Bulletproof Comics here in Brooklyn for 13 years now, there are still comic books for everyone. You just gotta find them.
They have, like anything else, they have different genres. They have comics made for more young audience, and they have, you know, comics made for the adult stuff. But the mainstream ones have, I think, leaned toward more adult content. You know, there's more violence and sex in comics, you know, like a lot of cleavage and stuff like that.
Anyone who's ever taken a marketing class can tell you that sex sells. And the most important comic book companies out there, Marvel and DC, caught on to this fact and, well, they ran with it. Their styles do remain distinctly different, however. Marvel Comics went with the strategy of staying ever new and ever fresh in the eyes of their readers. Their main attempt at success came with the Ultimate line. Headed by writers such as Brian Michael Bendis, Mark Millar, and Warren Ellis, Marvel mainstay characters such as Peter Parker, you know, Spider-Man, and the X-Men are just starting out again as rookies, allowing new readers to jump in on the ground floor once more. While Marvel tries its best to stay fresh, DC Comics tends to remember its long history a bit more, keeping the history fresh in the minds of both its young and old readers. Phil Jimenez is an artist at DC Comics and has dealt with this particular style firsthand.
I think they're comics for kids. I mean, I know DC, and I think Marvel, but DC specifically, like, creates whole lines of comics for the kids, most of them based on TV cartoons. But I would, you know, as we've known for many, many years, the readership of comics tends to be sort of college-age guys.
And with a readership of mostly college kids, violence is bound to happen, but it's far from an issue. Some books are just not made for kids, just as some television programs are way too adult for children. All parents have to do is keep an eye on their kids to ensure these comic books stay out of their hands. Violence often adds to the story being told, if indeed the script calls for it. For instance, I asked Phil about one of his most recent works, Road to Infinite Crisis, in which he was asked to draw a very graphic scene, the shooting death of mainstream superhero Blue Beetle.
I drew that moment and had, you know, it was colored to be incredibly impactful. So that's always the hope, is that there will be, it will have an impact, and that it will matter, and that it will mean something to the people that read it.
As the maturity level of comics increases over time, new opportunities are presenting themselves inside the industry. Capitalizing off the success of movies like Spider-Man and X-Men, which were huge box office draws, the comic industry continues to try and break their geeky, kiddie stereotype once and for all. And one of the main forms they're using is the trade paperback, which is a collection of multiple comics in one large volume. Hank Kwan sees the importance behind this new phenomenon.
It is good, you know, because trade paperback, I think, also brought in a lot of non-comic people, because I think trades are sold in regular bookshops, like Barnes & Nobles and, I guess, some newsstands. And, you know, like a lot of the non-comic people would pick it up, enjoy it, and they were saying, oh, wow, you know, it would give them a different perception on comic books because it's so well done.
As hunting for back issues and storming stores for the last copy of an issue becomes a thing of the past, this subculture is beginning to shape up into something bigger, something more important, something that can be accepted as not just for kids anymore. But as with everything, there will still be people who just don't get the point, and probably never will.
It's like, people would tell me, how could I read comics every month? He's like, I don't know, how could you watch Desperate Housewives every week? I mean, it's addicting, isn't it? I mean, the stories are good and the characters are great, and then you want to know about these people, you know? That's all it is.
For me, all I know is that as long as the stories stay interesting and as long as the attachment to characters is there, I'll remain the geek that I am, picking up 7 or 8 comic books a week for a good $20 or so. These comics will then continue to litter my room and floors when I'm too lazy to put them away. And hey, as long as new readers discover this ever-growing, ever-adapting medium, comics will continue to live on and grow on the floors of a new generation's room. For Brooklyn College Radio, I'm Ian Levenstein. Before we head back to the episode, I wanted to share with you this quick little promo that Derek Cower did for his upcoming Noisy Awards, as Derek is a friend of the show, and I most certainly want to support him. So, well, here's everything you need to know about the Noisy Awards.
Hi, my name is Derek Cower, and I'm the host of the Comic Book Noise Podcast. And I'd like to announce that nominations are now being accepted for the Noisy Awards. There are a lot of awards out there, but the Noisies are being brought to you by comic book podcasters for fans of comic book podcasts. By going to www.deliberatenoise.com and clicking on the Noisy Awards link, you'll find this promo, other audio files explaining things in more detail, the list of all the categories, and of course, contact information. Now, this isn't about driving a bunch of traffic to my site so I can sell ad space. This is about getting the voice of comic book podcast fans heard. We don't have our own comic book category in any of the major podcast directories, and I'll bet most comic book fans don't even know what a podcast is. This award is for us, and I hope you'll support our efforts by taking a few minutes to nominate your favorite creators and titles. Thanks.
All right, so there you go. There's Ian Levenstein way before the days of a podcast. It was about 3 months before I started even doing Geek Speak. So, and I hope it at least sounded semi-professional. That's what I was trying to do there.
It sounded pretty slick there, Ian. Don't worry.
Why, thank you, sir. Thank you very much. But let's actually go with the question that was asked in the actual piece itself. Are comic books for kids anymore? I mean, are they sort of leaving kids in the dust? I mean, is it leaving all those folks behind and just going for the adults now?
You know what? I think that it's kind of a two-sided question, really, because, you know, are comics getting more adult? Did that drive kids away? Or did comics get more adult because kids weren't interested anymore? I really think that for whatever reason, people have all kinds of theories about why kids today don't read comics or don't read American comics. And I'm not sure what that answer is, but what Marvel and DC are doing, and I guess they're doing what they have to do, they're realizing that they can't really aim books at teenagers because teenagers aren't buying their comics anymore. For whatever reason, they're more interested in Japanese comics. And so what the heck? You know, you look around, you say, well, we're not really going to grow our industry this way, but we have this captive audience of 20-somethings, 30-somethings that are really loving our books. You know, what the hell? Forget the kids. Let's just, you know, full bear market to these adults.
Yeah, well, they certainly have been going full market with the adults. I'll tell you that much, especially with what we mentioned before within Identity Crisis and Infinite Crisis. I mean, Damian, what about you? I mean, do you feel comics are for kids anymore? I mean, minus what we've already mentioned with the Johnny DC and all that, really doesn't seem to be a lot for kids.
No, there's not a lot that I've seen. You know, I've even went through, picked up some 2000 ADs and stuff like that that I haven't looked at for years, and they're definitely not for kids anymore. Most of the stuff, there's rarely anything you'd really want to show any kids that I've seen. I'm looking, you know, looking around what I've got around me, and, you know, even Daredevils and things like that. You know, when you have Bullseye shooting people in prison and that sort of thing, you don't, you know, it's something you don't really want to show someone who's, you know, under the age of 10.
Well, right away, that also does make me think of, you know, how comic books are viewed in the public these days, because even the movies that you would think would be more geared towards kids, except for maybe the Spider-Man movie, which definitely was geared for children. I mean, you have Wolverine going on an absolute rampage in X-Men 2. You have Bullseye in the Daredevil movie going absolutely insane. You've got Hulk with him going on a rampage. I mean, even what would be in the mainstream eye is not even gearing towards kids these days.
Yeah, that's true, other than the fact that, you know, I guess all those movies have pretty much been in the same range of movie ratings. I don't know what, you know, between PG and PG-13. So I guess, you know, that level of stuff, you know, if you're ready to take your kid to see that kind of film, then you're, you know, I guess they could handle reading the comics. And the truth of the matter is, you know, when I was 13, 14, 15, you know, I was reading a lot of books and watching a lot of R-rated movies and things that I probably shouldn't have been reading and watching anyway. So, I mean, are we just maybe being the old men here, complaining, worrying too much about it? Or, you know, are kids in their early teens, you know, is this just par for the course the way that things are these days?
Well, thinking back myself, we used to actually go out and make sure that we could get all the movies that we weren't allowed to watch and read all the things we weren't allowed to watch. And, you know, that's something that, well, I think that's been going on since way before we were born.
Hey, well, back in the day, comic books were that thing that you weren't supposed to get, because a lot of people thought, you know, that they were sort of quote-unquote corrupting the youth of America back in the day with all those studies that came out that they were slowly rotting brains and, you know, turning people against their parents. And, well, I mean, I seem to, you know, still like my parents pretty much, so it apparently didn't work on me, but...
Well, it didn't work on me, and I've got the long hair, I listen to heavy metal music, you know, I had double influence from that.
Oh, man. I know, he used to be a mass murderer by now. That's funny, I don't know what the answer to that question is, really, other than the fact that, you know, I guess I feel sort of bad that these main heroes, the icons, the big guys, the Supermans, the Batmans, the Spidermans, you know, the Avengers, whatever, there really isn't a safe kind of starting place with those characters anymore, other than those very few titles, like the Marvel Adventures titles, or the, you know, quite frankly, if I was that age, I would have absolutely no interest in any of those Johnny DC books.
Yeah.
Well, you've still got, like, the JLU cartoon and all that. They would have brought in a lot of new readers as well. You know, that was sort of a bit of a resurgence. You know, they got good stories in there. Everyone that gets beat up doesn't even really get damaged. And then they've got the comics that sort of can lead people into it from there as well.
Well, I guess you could say that. But also at the same time, when you look at JLU and you compare it to what happened in the early days with Batman the Animated Series and with Superman the Animated Series, JLU got away with a lot more, and I mean a lot more, than either of those two did. And they were certainly geared towards an older age than what Batman the Animated Series and Superman the Animated Series were, at least in my eyes.
Well, I have no problem having my young boy sit there watching it with me. You know, he sits there, he watches Teen Titans, he watches JLU, watches just normal Justice League, and he loves it. You know,
right,
he's got all his favourite characters in it, he's got all the toys that go with it. There's nothing really extremely violent, or what I would class as extremely violent in there.
Well, what about that scene with Captain Marvel and Superman basically destroying an entire town just to basically kick each other's butts? You know, I mean, there wasn't really any warrant to it whatsoever. It was just basically just typical beating each other up.
Yeah, but if you have a look at, they both walked away from it at the end. There was no blood. There was no, you know, just no one was crushed underneath a building falling that you saw.
Yeah, no elementary school was vaporized, and no one called for registration.
And nobody was randomly delayed 3 months. Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, that's the thing. That's kind of like how one of the differences and one of the changes in storytelling basically that comes out of this is you look at something like Civil War, which is it's pretty much like what would happen in the real world if superheroes really existed. Now, Marvel had really never done that before, because that's part of the thing that we've always kind of gone along with, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Hulk trashes the city, but no one's hurt. You know, everyone got out or whatever. You know, nothing happens even though he tore down a building. Or, you know, the Avengers or Thor throws his hammer through a bridge, but, you know, nobody's car is on the bridge or anything bad happens. That's not the case really that much anymore. You know, we're getting much more kind of, I guess, quote-unquote, realistic depiction of things and crazy violence. And I don't know, I don't know if I've seen anything quite so violent as that first issue of the Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk.
Oh my God!
Book.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I was speaking to my local comic store about that, and they actually said they went to put it on the shelf. They looked through it and said, "No, this has got to go on the top shelf where the kids can't actually reach it."
Good. Good.
So they
I'm
actually
glad to
put
see
in
that.
Things like that, so they've got sections that are out of reach.
Which is actually something that was not the case at my local shop. It was just right on there with every other book. And mind you, I know the guys in my shop. They're good at actually, you know, making sure that only people who are supposed to buy the comics. You know, if it has a mature emblem on it, if it's a Max line comic, then obviously only people who are a certain age are going to be able to buy this comic, and so on and so forth. But every now and then you will see somebody slip away. You know, somebody who you're wondering, is this guy 17 or is he 14? Is he just one of those older-looking kids that really shouldn't have picked that title up? Especially something like Ultimate Hulk Wolverine, where you had Wolverine literally ripped in half in that issue.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want kids reading something like that ever.
With lovely guts and everything else hanging out.
Oh, exactly.
You know, this brings up another point that I think is kind of dangerous, and you know, I don't know. Again, I don't know the situation in Australia, but we have in comic shops, you know, here in the U.S., we always every year we have a spate of lawsuits or arrests or something that happens because of a minor buys a book from a comic store that then the local law enforcement deems, you know, perverted or pornography or whatever. Something that happens where the comic store owner is, you know, brought up on charges for these kind of things. And for the most part, you know, like I said, when you have lines, you have demarcated lines like Vertigo. You know, Vertigo is an adult book. You put that on the shelf up high where the kids can't read it. You know, you see the Max label, you know, it's a more adult book. You put that away. But we've also seen just in the regular two mainstream universes, we're seeing a lot of kind of graying of the lines there, especially. And we were talking about this a little bit before. Two series that came to my mind from the last year, we saw a series by the name of Jack Cross that came out from DC, and a series, a relaunch of the Vigilante series from DC, both of which featured simply the DC Bullet. There was no warning of mature content. You look in the issue of Vigilante, you see somebody getting their head decapitated with an axe. You see, you know, Jack Cross. I mean, that's not a mainstream DC Universe book. And if somebody looked at that and put that on the shelf, you know, I can see them getting into some trouble for that. Did Marvel and DC, I mean, do they owe it to shop owners and people out there to be labeling their books?
Well, look, I got to tell you one thing. if the name is Warren Ellis, chances are it's going to be a mature book. You got to get on that. You got to realize that, you know, putting this with just a regular DC bullet on there and not putting mature audiences on there, pretty much every title that Warren Ellis is going to put out there is going to have at least one scene in it that, unless you're, you know, unless you're a certain age, you're going to look at that and be like, wow, that's really awesome. And then you look at your mother who happens to be round in the corner and she sees the guts and all that spewed and like, they let you buy this? And right away, you turn to the mother and say, you let him buy this? It's not they letting you buy it. That's the problem, because it should be the parents that are stopping the kids from actually purchasing this. They actually gave a damn and watched their kids purchase this stuff and actually stopped them from just going to the comic shop themselves and just picking out a random comic, then maybe, just maybe, they'd stop from buying these comics that they shouldn't be buying.
I think that comes down to the fact that, like, not all parents are like us who grew up with them.
Yeah.
You know, I know what I would look at to what I would show, to show, you know, young kids. I've got tons of stuff that I definitely know. Some of the old Razor stuff that I've got Razor Uncut, and that I don't think my son wants to read until he's at least 18. especially seeing some of the covers they did on the bus. If the parents actually took an interest, except for just thinking, oh, comics are for kids, that's where the real problem lies there.
Yeah, that is, I mean, that's where I think we get into the danger, is that in the general public's perception, now, whether this is right or wrong, I'm not going to argue this, but, you know, in the general public's perception, comics, you know, have that taint of these are for, you know, young kids to read these books, which is why we get the lawsuits, which is why we get all these kind of confusing, controversial things that happen, is that people are surprised. The general populace does not realize that most of these books are aimed now at adults. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with having comics that are aimed at adults, nothing wrong with that. But, you know, when these parents today, chances are when they were kids, when they were growing up, you know, they were in a time when you could buy a comic and not worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, there was, you know, unless you're going to the head shop to pick up the new, you know, R. Crumb comic or something like that, you didn't really, you know, there wasn't too much danger, especially from Marvel or DC. You know, though they always had that kind of reputation as being family-friendly, no real super controversial issues. So part of the, you know, like I said, part of the problem is that the general public does think comics are for kids, and so they are shocked and surprised when they see mature content. But, you know, the reality is, I guess, that most kids, most teenagers, they don't have the interest in the books anymore. So they're kind of screwed. You know, Marvel and DC are kind of screwed. If they get too adult with their content, then people complain. If they try to aim at a market that doesn't exist. Yeah, exactly. Then the adult comic readers are like, oh, this sucks. We want blood and gore.
Well, at the same time, can you sort of blame this on the fact that, well, the comics code used to mean something? These days, it really doesn't. And especially, I mean, the fact that Marvel doesn't use it at all now. They're completely on their own rating system. DC uses it on some books, but not on others. They really have a choice on whether or not they're going to use the comics code. It's going to come to a point where, you know, that familiar logo that pretty much everybody who grew up at a certain time knows. I mean, I know it. I'm sure everybody who's listening to it has seen a comics code. Well, 10 years from now, they might very well not know what the hell the comics code even is anymore.
Up until I watched one of the documentaries that went into with Stan Lee talking about actually how they had to bring in the comics code and get the logo and all that stuff, I didn't even know it existed.
Really?
This was only 3 weeks ago that I saw this.
Wow.
You know, it never was a big issue really back here.
Well, I mean, it wasn't a big issue in the 80s when I started collecting comics. I didn't know what that logo was. I didn't really pay any attention to it either. It's sort of like nowadays, if you're into video games, you know, the whole ESRB rating system, where it's supposed to mean something, but it really, you know, to most parents or most people, they're kind of clueless. They don't really know what that means.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
definitely.
They're not really expecting it. They don't know what those different labels are. And Marvel's system, they kind of have a modified movie rating system that they use with their books. In fact, I was researching this a while ago, and I believe Marvel's actually gone through something like 5 different rating systems in the last 5 years.
Yep.
So they've been kind of all over the place. At first, I think they tried to use the movie ratings, like PG and stuff, and then they kind of got in trouble from the MPAA saying, hey, that's copyright. And then they came up with their own kind of system. And yeah, DC has no system. The only thing that they follow is if there's a book that they think will pass the comic code, they will get it approved. If they don't think it will pass, they don't even submit it. They don't care. It doesn't mean anything to anybody anymore.
Well, and every now and then they will slap a mature reader's little emblem on there just so people will know, you know, this is not for kids. But like you said, Jack Cross, I picked up Jack Cross. I enjoyed Jack Cross, but at the same time, I picked it up realizing, hey, wait a minute, the mature reader's tag isn't on this. What the hell?
I guess we're in an age where they assume that we're all mature readers.
I guess, which pretty much answers one of the questions that we had. And we have a post on the forums by regular forum goer and regular listener Matthew Guy that I want to read right now. Comics and violence are like PB&J. They go together. The question is, how much is too much of a good thing? Marvel's Max and DC imprint titles serve to a core audience that wants ultra-violent material. Johnny DC and Marvel Adventures titles for kids under 12. Regular comics are for 13 to 17 and any age above that, in my view. And mature titles are for those mature enough to read them and understand the consequences, and that comics are make-believe fantasy. Me, personally, I have never received / nor bought mature titles in my comics, but I respect individuals' rights to purchase the items if they are able to understand the difference between real and not real in the world of comics. In the world of cable TV, the good and evil of the internet, and explicit lyrics and music, comics are just another medium for kids to fill their minds with, some good and some bad. The best advice for parents / family members are to inform themselves to the comics medium before sending them to the store. In effort, do your homework. I give my 6-year-old niece Scrooge McDuck Gemstone comics, not Punisher Max titles to read. Give her Johnny DC Scooby-Doo before giving her a Preacher trade. Be informed. Ask the comics retailer for suggestions for the kid in the genre they like most. Hope that helps, Matthew Guy. And he certainly has a good point with that. But again, it just really takes the parent actually going in there and actually taking the time to talk to the comic book guy behind the counter.
You know, I don't know about you guys, but my parents, they didn't know what the hell I was doing with comics.
Yeah.
You know, they drove me to the shop sometimes. I don't recall if they ever came inside the doors, you know, for however many years this was until I got my own car. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if I can blame the parents for being ill-informed. I guess you can always for something. I just think we're at a point where maybe we should just kind of go ahead and just say, you know, hey, you know, young kids, we're not interested in you. We don't want you to be in our store. We're not selling to you anymore. I think the biggest problem is, you know, there are comics out there that are for under 10. There are a good number of those.
Yeah.
And then there's a good number of comics that I say would be for older teens, but I don't think there's a lot of books that are appealing to the maybe like 10 to 15 or something like that kind of range.
Yeah, Damien, as a parent, I mean, obviously, I mean, do you know other parents that, well, might be comic fans and, you know, have kids that you know, that they're trying to get them into comics, or at the same time, parents that just in general have kids that are interested in the whole, you know, comic book world? I mean, do they themselves take the time to maybe go in and talk to the guy behind the counter and find out what's good for their kids and what's not?
Most of the people that I've known who have got kids, I've got some friends, but most of the people actually would be already, that I know of, who are introducing them to their kids are actually already reading them.
Okay.
So these days, like, unfortunately, I'm one of the first ones of all the people that I know to have kids. So I'm sort of one leading the way for them. But I've just seen, like, even just nephews and nieces and stuff, like, they would just go into the newsagent and pick up whatever was on the shelf. The shops themselves, you know, they're few and far between over here, unfortunately. And even most of the guys that I've known who have been in the stores actually would point out to people, no, this isn't for you, this is for you, this is what I think you would like, oh, I've put this aside for you, you might like it. And if people brought the kids in, they would show them the ones that were more aimed for kids.
All I know is that this past week, my comic book shop guy basically came over to me and handed me The Boys, which is Garth Ennis's new book that he's doing with Derek Robinson, and pretty much just handed it to me and said, "Get ahead. Come on, get ahead." And I'm like, "All right, fine." And I just I left the store with it. And
tell me you did not like that book, Ian.
Dude, I loved it. I'm sorry.
Oh my god,
I had to, man. And you know what? Quite frankly, because I'm a Transmet fan, I'm a Derek Robinson fan through and through, and that might be one of the reasons why I really enjoyed it. And also, oddly enough, one of the characters in that book looked oddly like Brian Deemer of Comic Geek Speak.
Well, to me, he even more oddly looked like Simon Pegg, which really kind of annoyed me that I could tell that they were drawing him from like a headshot or something.
Yeah.
But that's kind of beside the point. And see, something like The Boys, to me, I read that series and the first issue, and I didn't really care for it. But you know, that's the thing, you know, I guess Ennis is kind of like almost parodying himself with how kind of ridiculous that book is.
Yeah.
You know, I was a big fan of the Preacher series, so I have nothing against, you know.
You're not the only one.
I have nothing against him, you know, him writing an adult, crazy-ass, anal sex comedy kind of guy with a butt head sort of thing. But yeah, that book was a little just, it wasn't like it was too adult, it was just a little too much Ennis for me to take seriously.
I remember friends of mine when it was coming out, and one of my friends' mother was actually waiting for us to get home so she could read it. She used to pick them out of our bundles before we got to them. So
now see, that's the type of mom that I wish I had right there. Oh, man.
You know what? That just reminded me. I'm having like a traumatic flashback to my childhood because... Talking about comic book moms, I mean, we can go over and talk about how our moms dealt with stuff, but two of my good friends from when I was growing up that collected comics had some serious comic problems with their mothers. One of my good friends, his mom was kind of a new agey, sort of born-again, religious kind of type, he came home from school one day to find all of his long boxes gone.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and his mom basically sat him down and said, you know, I looked through some of your comics, and they were disturbing, and there's a lot of, like, satanic images and nasty things, and so I've taken them away.
Oh,
I'm glad my parents got over that from the music I used to listen to.
Oh, man. Yeah, and my friend, he kind of figured out that she put them in the trunk of her car, and so he snuck down there and managed to rescue a few choice books before he had to sacrifice the rest of his collection.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, that was, again, this kind of that perception, you know, the parent taken aback by, you know, these perceived violence or whatever devilish things that they found in these comics. And one of my other good friends, we must have been like 15 or 16 or something at the time. Again, his mom kind of came to him one day with a tear in her eye. She found copies of this, I don't know if you remember this book, but it was like Marvel in the 80s. They came out with kind of a Vertigo-esque four-issue miniseries on the Gargoyle.
Okay. Yeah, I actually read one issue of that back in the day.
Okay. So I don't know, Damien, if you remember that book or not.
No,
but
I don't remember. The only Gargoyles I remember was the Disney cartoon comic from DC.
No, it was, I mean,
which I've still got somewhere.
hey, there's a new one. There's a new Gargoyles comic out, and the first issue's out, second issue's coming out in another month or so.
Well, I'm going to be making a phone call.
Well, the Marvel's Gargoyle character was, you know, a member of the Defenders. He's basically a ripoff of the Demon.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, like I said, it was kind of a Vertigo-ish style, like really kind of heavily, you know, inked and really dark art and dealing with kind of some... I don't even remember what the themes were, but his mom found this book and she was crying, saying that, you know, she couldn't believe that her son was reading such demonic filth, and she really wanted him to, you know, get rid of all his comics, and so he actually, through guilt, voluntarily gave up, you know, buying comics anymore after that point.
So she'd rather him masturbate than read comics.
Well, see, he didn't do that.
Okay, all right. Because
he was a good boy. Did he become the axe murderer because he wasn't regular?
No, see, he became an upstanding, fine young man. But you know, I don't know about you guys.
What a shame!
I never had a problem with my parents, and I think it's mostly because they just really never had that much interest in it. Never really knew what I was reading, and I wasn't really reading anything crazy or wild at the time. But they really didn't know what I was doing or what I was up to.
Okay. Yeah, see, with my parents, I could talk about these things with my dad because my dad is just, well, awesome. And, you know, he'll basically, like, he's as big a... I wouldn't exactly say he's a nerd, but he's, like, into pretty much anything I put in front of him, and he'll give that a shot. Like, you know, he's read a couple of my comics here or there, and I'll, like, a hand to him, and I'm like, you'll really like this. He's like, okay. You know, flips through it a little bit, and then starts reading, then starts watching a Yankee game again. That's the way he kind of is. And my mom pretty much was just like, you know, I'd go to her, and I'd say, you know, can I get a little money for some comics? And she'd just be like, all right, fine, because she knew it was just right down the block. You know, I'd be back in 10 minutes, and that was the way it went. And she at first would sort of just like roll her eyes at it, and then she realized I was a geek at a young age. Let's put it that way. I was the type of guy who was sort of like the outcast of junior high, and
what?
You know, like,
looking, are you looking, kidding?
Really? Are you shocked by that? Yeah, and
I think we're
you
all
know,
wearing that shirt, aren't we?
Yes. And you know, we were the junior high kids who were basically just looking at the other kids and said, it's all right, someday they'll be pumping my gas. But at that point, you know, she was just happy that I was doing something, let's put it that way, because I didn't have many friends in junior high, and that's around when I first picked up comics, and, you know, just it gave me something to do, and she was just happy about that. Now, she did see the occasional comic where she was like, what are you reading? And I'd tell her a little bit about it, and she'd just be like, okay, whatever. You know?
Eyes glazed over.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, then she'd walk into the other room and just do something else. But, you know, my dad, at least, you know, he thought it was kind of cool, and that was that. I didn't pick up too many of the comics that you would consider to be really, really violent. I didn't really get into violent comics until about maybe 4 or 5 years back anyway, at least from what I remember. And that was when Transmetropolitan came out and all that, and absolutely ate up Transmetropolitan with a spoon. Immediately realized, hey, this Warren Ellis guy is awesome. I got to find every single thing he's ever wrote. I'm finally getting the Stormwatch now and picking up some of those old Stormwatch issues that he wrote. And I was into, well, Alias, the Max title, which we're going to get into Max and Vertigo titles in general in the next couple of minutes here. But, you know, nothing that was too bad. But my parents didn't know what I was doing. Let's put it that way. If they saw a cover that was really, really out there, chances are I'd end up reading that about 4 years down the road. And, you know, again, like I mentioned with an episode about 3 episodes back when Peter was on the show and we talked about sort of having an in with kids, comic books were my in with kids when I worked at a sleepaway camp. And I would make sure that they would only read the books that I felt that they were ready for. These were 13-year-olds. And I had an occasional Alias title in there that I would put over to the side and say, this is a Max title, you can't read it, it's like an R-rated movie, go into the other corner and read whatever else you want to read, but this is stuff you can't read, this is stuff you can read. And eventually, you know, after whining and moaning that they couldn't read it, they would give up and then they'd go read what I gave them. And they liked
wait
it.
Wait until your back's turned and go and take it.
Exactly. But, well, at least I'm hoping that didn't happen. But you know, I tried to make it that they couldn't get to it and all was well with the world. So on my side of things, I tried to keep this away from the young kids. I don't know how many people actually did manage to do that, though. So there's the question.
Well, so I have a question for you now, since you're segueing us into talking about Max and Vertigo stuff. Trivia question.
Yeah.
First word.
Here we go.
In
oh, yeah.
The first Max Alias issue.
Ahem. Fuck.
There you go. So Marvel was setting the tone right from the beginning. Yeah.
Yes. And also, you could sort of tell that Brian Michael Bendis was thinking to himself, you mean I finally get to say it? I finally get to have them say it? And, you know, I knew right away. Exactly.
I know.
Exactly.
And I finally get to have Luke Cage do some backdoor action.
Oh, God.
You know, that's the kind of thing where I initially, you know, even though I do enjoy mature comics and independent comics and things,
yeah,
that really, I don't know why, maybe because it was Marvel or something, that just, like, turned me off from that series right away. Like, man, this is just kind of over the top, like, pandering to the, you know, lowest common denominator kind of thing. And that's just totally first impression.
Okay.
I'm going to admit that. But that was my, you know, when it first hit the stands, I kind of flipped through it and I was like, oh my God, what the hell are they doing?
Well, see, it's funny you should mention that actually, because literally that Max title was an eye opener for me to the point where, like, I picked it up, I thumbed through it, and literally after that first word, I'm like, oh, I'm in. I'm in, baby. Because I hadn't read many mature comics. And I realized, you know, as I was getting older, I needed comics that were, you know, something that was a bit more adult, you know, something that I felt like I could really latch on to. And it was like watching HBO, you know, it was like watching something on TV. That's what I felt Alias was. You know, this was the HBO, this was the Showtime. They could get away with it because it was a Max title. If it was happening in a real Marvel comic, on the other hand, I would have been really pissed.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, as long as it's divided up, as long as it's under a special imprint or something that lets people know, you know, where you stand.
Yeah, if you look throughout the 90s, you had Marvel and DC, but if you look at half of the Image titles, there was no special title for Image. And you look, you had The Darkness, you had Deviate, you had Pit, you had Spawn, and a lot of those were extremely violent. Especially The Darkness, especially Deviate where they're exploding people's heads.
Sounds like a good time to me.
I'm hoping, you know, they bring it back when Gen 13 coming back, they can have Deviate.
That's definitely true that was the case. But you know what, that's, again, I guess maybe for me, maybe it's just nostalgia or something, or like expecting Marvel and DC to somehow be the old men, the classy guys of the comic book industry. For some reason, because it didn't really seem as bad or as egregious to me that these upstart guys during the grim and gritty 90s were willing to go for that kind of stuff.
Well, at least it didn't say Stan Lee presents Alias, you know, because if that was the case, then I would have been, oh my God.
Listen up, true believers. Luke is taking her from behind.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'm sorry, Stan. If you're
I'm sorry. I even said that, actually.
Oh, no, God. Yeah, it's staying in.
As long as the panel before it didn't say, okay, get ready, bend over and take it like a man.
Let me ask you this, because we are, do you think, are comics really written at a more mature level these days, or are we just getting kind of the same old Arrested Development sort of things with frosting of fucks and sex and blowed up heads?
Well, I feel that a lot of writers are getting more and more away with having their characters, you know, say curses without saying curses. You know, I mean, having it be, you know, star, asterisk, star, exclamation point. A lot of guys are getting away with that now. And back in the day, they really
just
wouldn't have.
Saying a different word or something. If you look back at Poison Elves, you had Luce in that. He would say crow. And that was his curse word.
But, I mean, not even talking about that kind of stuff. I mean, our comic stories, are we getting mature, what I want to call adult mature stories, like themes, concepts? Or are we still just kind of getting, you know, fantasy, you know, fanboy power fantasies, but just with people saying fuck?
You know what? It depends on the book. It really does. Mm. It totally depends on the book, because when you look at something like Transmetropolitan, that is a mature comic book with mature themes, with mature satire on politics and the world itself. That is what I look at right there. Even back in the 80s, I mean, with Watchmen, even though it didn't have any curses in it, that was a mature comic book. And in my mind, stuff like Watchmen and, you know, Dark Knight and all that, or the footprint... V for Vendetta were the footprint for what was going to happen in the future. And now they just happen to have fuck in it.
Yeah. I guess, you know, what I see, part of the problem with that always bothers me is, you know, if we're just getting, you know, if all this is just the surface level stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if we're throwing in sex, we're throwing in swear words, we're throwing in decapitations, we're throwing in all this crazy shit, but we're still, like I said, telling the same old kind of boring, you know, stupid stories. That's not, to me, what I would call a mature title.
Yeah.
You know, that's a title that appeals to 13-year-olds who giggle at swear words and who find that kind of thing exciting.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, a lot of the best stuff, a lot of the stuff I consider to be more mature or more actually dealing with more adult themes, don't really need to go that level, don't really need to do that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, and actually, one thing that I'll mention, Ex Machina. Ex Machina is a title, obviously it's a Wildstorm title, but the fact that it's a Wildstorm title proves that Vertigo doesn't get to have all the fun. You know, that there can be some titles that fall under different banners of DC, except for the DC Bullet. That's where I'll draw the line. I think Jack Cross should have been a Wildstorm or a Vertigo title, but, you know, we mentioned that already. But Ex Machina only has a couple of curses in it. Every now and then they'll drop an F-bomb, or you know, they'll say shit or something like that. But it is so well done and so real. I mean, living in New York, I know this New York. Even though there's you know, there's a superhero running in it, this is my New York. And I am so happy with that book week in and week out, and it would not be able to do what it does without being a mature comic book in the mature brand of Wildstorm. What do you guys think? I mean, what other titles can you think of off the top of your head that really you feel are mature as opposed to just, you know, throwing in a fuck for fuck's sake?
Well, if you look at something like Sandman Mystery Theater, they rarely swore in that, and that was a distinct mature title, just the way it was written.
Yeah, that's one of my all-time favorite series. Vertigo, again, it's a Vertigo imprint. But yeah, it was, like you said, it was stories. It was written for more of a mature adult audience with mature adult characters that didn't really have what I would say an excessive amount of blood or violence or sex. I mean, yeah, there was violence and things. It wasn't as overt or vulgar as a lot of the books that we're seeing now, though.
But it was also the fact that they dealt with the personal lives of the people behind it rather than ignoring it. Like, you know, how many people know what half of the superheroes do when they're out of costume?
Yeah. Well, hey, top 10. Top 10's a great thing to mention there also. Okay, most of Alan Moore's books we can probably mention, but, you know, I mean, top 10 does a great job of being mature without, you know, being over the top, as it were. Even though it's being complete satire of comic books in general, there's got plenty of maturity in there, too. And also, hey, even though it's about fairy tales, Fables. Fables yeah. can be a very, very mature book at times. You know, there's plenty of great stuff out there.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think what else there is. You've got, well, Grendel wasn't overtly violent. Well, it was violent, but it was sort of... Matt Wagner, a lot of his stuff is just, you know, more of the mature stuff. That's one thing that's always attracted me to him. If you look at the old Mage stuff and everything, you know, a lot of that I wouldn't show... That's a mature title I wouldn't show kids or anything like that.
How old do you feel you should be to read Grendel?
I reckon you'll be used to that sort of stuff by the age of, say, 15 or so. Yeah, you would have, you know, if you look at what's happening, you know, just in current events, news or whatever, you would actually be not shocked about it by about 15, if that makes sense.
Man, you should have, it's when you need to go back to David Price for.
Well, we'll probably actually have like a Grendel-centric episode eventually with David, but yeah.
Yeah, that's where I guess what I'd like to see more of is more thoughtful kind of books that I would consider to be mature books, not because there's swearing, not because there's violence, not because there's all that kind of stuff, but just more that deals with actual things that adults deal with, that appeal to adult readers. And as much as I like it, something like Preacher, that book is really probably going to appeal to sort of, you know, the Beavis and Butthead in all of us. A lot of this stuff is kind of immature humor and butt jokes and, you know, dick jokes and you know, anything where you get a guy whose head ends up looking like a penis at the end of it. You know, that's appealing to our inner 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
Really. And he does, you know, it's a thrill ride and it's fun and it did delve into sort of some questions of religion and some other deeper topics. But, you know, ultimately I'd say that's definitely aimed at the more, like I said, the teenager in all of us. Other things though, other titles that I have to kind of go outside of the mainstream for that are more mature, you know, things like something like Love and Rockets, for example.
Yeah.
You know, Sandman Mystery Theater, again, I love that. A lot of the Vertigo stuff deals with that. Even something like, not necessarily adult, but even something like Astro City, I think is a little more of a mature take kind of on superheroes and looks at that.
I have to agree with that. I've been rereading those of late, and yeah, definitely I can see why I liked it then. Also, things, what would you think of things like Dawn, stuff like that? I don't know if you ever read them, but those I would have classed as a mature title, not just for the artwork. The actual content, when you actually get the message behind it, is sort of like people understood The Invisibles, people didn't understand The Invisibles with Grant Morrison. There's a lot of, yeah, behind-the-scenes type stuff that I picked up from Dawn, which I wouldn't have noticed anywhere else.
Man, it's funny that you talk about The Invisibles, because I bought every single issue of that series, and I really have no idea what the hell it was about. It was a fun ride. It was a crazy ride, and I really enjoyed it. And you know, Grant Morrison is kind of batshit crazy, but
I was just going to say, of course you didn't know what it was about. It was a Grant Morrison title, man. That's the best thing about Grant Morrison.
I enjoyed it.
Exactly.
It was something, some parts that I could sort of link into and go, my God, he's touching on that.
hey, I have one word for you, Sea Guy. I have, to this day, I reread it about three times. I have no idea what the hell Grant Morrison was even writing with that title, and yet somehow I still liked it. That guy's like a genius, and at the same time, he might be the craziest man on earth, right up there with Alan Moore. So
I think what helped me a bit is I had knew a few people that were actually into the same sort of magic as him, and they sort of said, "Oh, this is what it's about here. Read this, you might understand it."
There you go.
And so yeah.
Well, let's talk on Vertigo in general for a minute here, and also we can actually group Wildstorm into this as well, as Wildstorm's been going more and more towards the mature as the years have gone on. Now, Vertigo also has gone through a major transformation from its original inception to now. I mean, you've got majorly different Vertigo titles out there now than you once did.
Yeah.
Do you feel it's a different sort of maturity now with Vertigo than when it first started out?
I found coming back to Vertigo, I had a break of about 6 years, and coming back to it, a lot of the stuff I just looked at and thought, no.
Okay.
The stuff that I used to love, like if you look back at Paul Sandman, Mystery Theater, Sandman, of course, Swamp Thing when it became the Vertigo title, Hellblazer, which is still as good as it ever was, and you go through a lot of the mini-series like House of Secrets, all of those, the closest thing I found would be Fables.
Okay.
And Fables is like a lend of, sort of branching off from House of Secrets, which came out, I don't know if you remember it, but it came out after Sandman finished, and it was actually about Cain and Abel and all the things that went on in their two houses.
Huh. Interesting. I might have to track that down now.
You know, I got on board with Vertigo pretty fast. I missed the Alan Moore Swamp Thing run, and I missed Sandman the first time through, but DC actually reprinted all their Vertigo series in standalone monthly issues.
Yeah, I started with Sandman at about 30, and I actually was able to catch up with the reprints.
Yeah, during the 90s, I went on a, you know, I hadn't really read a lot of Sandman, and I went and bought all the trades, and just kind of went nuts. And I enjoyed it. You know, I enjoyed it at the time. Again, a lot of people nowadays kind of look back on that and mock it. It was goth, kind of namby-pamby kind of crap. But I don't know. At the time, for me, you know, I thought it was an entertaining story. Definitely more mature than the average book out there. I don't know if there's anything that's coming out of Vertigo right now that's of the same quality as those original kind of big hits.
Okay. Now, do you feel that that's a sign of the times, or do you just feel that it's just, well, quite frankly, just has never hit that peak?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more along the lines of that, you know, you're always going to have these works that are considered masterpieces and classics, and it's hard to come up with new ones. You know, it's hard to do that. I think something like Preacher, again, was a smash hit that was really, really successful and really popular. That was one of the kind of later day masterpieces. Other stuff right now, you know, I'm a little bit more out of touch with the line right now. Damien talked about Fables. I know that's very popular, kind of in that same supernatural sort of vein.
Yeah, the only other thing I'm getting is Hellblazer.
Okay. Well, see, I'm a guy who actually got into the Vertigo line obviously later than you guys did. Well, because quite frankly, when Vertigo came out, I wasn't old enough to be reading Vertigo. And now I'm reading Vertigo, and where I am is obviously a different point where other people are, because I have to go back and read that old stuff. And the, you know, what many people consider to be the better Vertigo, I gotta go out and find there. But my Vertigo, you know, the Vertigo that I started off with is stuff like We Three, which was a very, very good Grant Morrison, Frank Whiteley collaboration. Stuff like, well, Why the Last Man, which is fantastic. Every single Why the Last Man issue I pick up is better than the last. And that's something
I'm
that
planning
I'm
planning on picking that one up in trades.
Yes.
I've got to get the trades for that one. But,
It's not too far from ending now, actually. There's a set limit on that title. I believe it's issue 60, which is going to be the last one.
You know, it's kind of weird that you bring that up, and I don't mean to cut you off. But
no, it's fine.
That Why the Last Man, again, that was a series that I jumped on board with late. I got the first trade ordering from Amazon like a couple years ago, and I was nuts for that book for maybe about 25 issues, and then something happened where it just petered off for me, and I haven't read it in like 20 issues now.
Well, what was it exactly that
you know, I don't know. I think that part of the problem was that it was such an awesome concept, the idea that he came up with for this world. I guess I got to a point where I was kind of like, I don't really think he's exploring all the ramifications of what this would really mean.
Okay.
If this really happened, it kind of became more of a just Yorick gets laid, ultra, you know.
Yeah.
His keeper kills some people. Mm-hmm. The monkey gets kidnapped, whatever kind of thing. It was a little too small, I guess, for what I was looking for. I was hoping that it'd get a little bit bigger. If
you were a fan of it at first, I'd recommend actually picking up the last couple of trades that came out, because since then they've actually started touring the world, basically. And you see a lot more of the scope of, you know, the ramifications of you know, obviously there being no men except for Yorick. And you see a lot more of just, like, the devastation that was left in there and a couple of the other things that really were missing early on. He's built upon the story. Let's put it that way.
All right, well, I'll come back. I just, you know, I just wanted to come in with that because I loved that series, too, when it first came out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And actually, I came in late, actually. I went backwards, basically. There was one solo issue that was, you know, nothing to do with the actual... Actually, it was a two-issue arc that had little to do with the actual story itself, where there was this theater troupe that was putting on a story about there being a last man. And that was the issue... That was the arc that it really got me. And from there, I immediately went back and picked up every trade I could and started picking it up, you know, from there, and caught myself up and, you know, was glad I did. But a lot of people have different takes on Why the Last Man, and I feel that that's also a great example of what the Vertigo line can do these days, and I need to read some of the older stuff to actually really understand, you know, where this line came from. And it certainly is, you know, mature without being over the top most of the time with Vertigo.
Also with Vertigo, I've noticed of late, it's just became miniseries after miniseries after miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, there's what, two, three ongoing titles? Why you count Fables, you count Hellblazer, there's nothing else.
Is Dead Man going to be a miniseries or a ongoing? I forget. Because I know that there's a new Dead Man, which apparently is not the Dead Man that we know, but it's called Dead Man coming out of Vertigo. I'm not entirely sure what that's about.
Yeah, I'm not sure myself on that one. But okay. I used to get it in because there was that many ongoing series that the story just kept on evolving and getting better and better and better. And that's what I sort of got caught in with Vertigo with.
Oh, hey, you're not the only one. Now, also touching on Wildstorm for a little bit, actually, before we wrap things up and go on to the main reason why Mr. Damian is here in the first place for his new segment, Wildstorm is going through a major transformation now. I mean, obviously, when it first started out, a lot of Wildstorm was the original image, and, you know, obviously then broke off into Jim Lee's own company, eventually purchased by DC, and now under the you know, the main branding of DC, to the point where even Captain Atom crossed over into Wildstorm Universe for a little bit and had a little stint there, and now he's back. And Mr. Majestic also had a little bit of a stint in the DC Comics world for a short time, and now he's back, I believe. But Wildstorm's going through a major change, And it's being stemmed by creators like Gail Simone coming on to books and Grant Morrison coming on to books. And it looks like they're trying to make their titles more mature and sort of gain new readership to possibly people who might have written it off as just, you know, something that they could just look over.
Well, they've always had, you know, Planetary and The Authority and those kind of series that set that adult, more adult tone. I really find that kind of weird that they're bringing back these old... Because, you know, I was around for that crap when it first launched, you know, Wildcats and Wetworks and all that stuff, and they were just garbage. And I find it kind of amusing that these top-flight creators now are working on trying to revamp these old books that were kind of reminiscent of the worst of the Image excesses back in the 90s.
Well, Gail Simone's doing Gen 13, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
Well, I've been going through. I've got all of the original Gen 13. I've got the spin-off Gen... What was the spin-off called? Gen 13 Uncut or something like that?
Oh, man, I never got into that series.
You know, there's a lot of... I used to get in a lot of Image. You know, you had Witchblade, you had Darkness, you had... Oh, I'm just trying to remember half of them now. You had More Than Mortal, which was a 8-part miniseries, which was... It dealt with... Actually, it was a bit more of a mature thing as well, for the fact that it dealt with... There was 8 avatars of Earth, and one of them wanted to kill the world, or wanted to kill the others to get all their powers and whatnot. Like, there was quite a lot through Image that should have been sort of labelled some way as well, thinking about it.
Yeah, I can sort of see where you're coming from there.
You know, again, I guess part of... We kind of briefly talked about that before. I think part of it was just that, you know, they were a new company. They were kind of coming out of nowhere, and no one really had any expectation of their history. Right. Well, there was no history. Like, there's no 50-year history of people expecting Superman to be kid-friendly. You know, no one knew a single thing about any of these characters, and so there wasn't that expectation, you know, from past generations.
Well, just in general also, like, Image Comics, Wildstorm Comics, they were sort of similar in the fact that, well, they really just didn't give a damn about ratings. You know, I mean, they didn't give a damn about that. They just wanted to do comics, and in the process, there might have been some people picking up their books that really shouldn't have been picking up their books, but hey, that was another reader for them to have.
Did you read them as from a company, or did you just read them as the book itself? That's the other thing to look at it. I never looked at it as, this is a DC book, this is a Marvel book, this is a Image book, this is a Dark Horse book. It was always, I like this title, and this title.
Yeah, I was never... I mean, there's people you hear that talk about how they're a Marvel zombie or whatever. I wasn't really like that either. It was more about the character for me, I guess, at the time, and that's... Part of what's happened with that, with the shift, and we talked about this, I think, briefly in the Civil War episode, was we are seeing a bigger shift nowadays to people buying for the creative team.
Yeah.
Which definitely changes the expectations. So you have, you know, like, again, if you put somebody like Garth Ennis on a book, you know what he's going to give you. You know, if you put a certain creator on a title, you know that it's going to be a certain mature, adult-level kind of book.
Hey, I admit it, I'm going to be picking up Gen 13 for the sole reason that Gail Simone's on it. You know, I've never picked up Gen 13 in my life, but if Gail Simone writes it, I will come. So there you go. And, I mean, that's the case with a lot of books, actually, quite frankly, these days. I hate to admit it because, I mean, there are some titles that I will just read because it's a character that I love. But if you bring a writer that I know or an artist that I know onto a title, I'll probably at least give it a little bit of a shot to see if I am caught on to it, because hey, these guys have done no wrong to me before, so I'm sure they can probably do right by this.
Actually, what I found was even better. I went through some old trades of mine that I found in a box somewhere, and I pulled out the Batman Gothic trade, and then I realized it was written by Grant Morrison, and I just bought it because I liked the look of the picture on the front originally. You know, going back 10 years, and I thought, this is good, I'll grab that.
Oh, man, sounds like me with my shiny cover with Uncanny X-Men. Jeez. Well, there you go with that. And what's up?
Lobo. Now, there's a title that wasn't marked as mature, if I remember. Well, it ended up being marked as mature, but there was a lot of stuff in his... You know, I've got majority of his comics.
What are you talking about, you bastard?
You know, stop the teacher running away, chop her legs off.
I'll bite your kneecaps off.
Yeah, that was one as well that was set in the, you know, I used to get it religiously, but it was not a mature, well, it was not really marked as a mature book, if I remember.
But it was sure as hell mature. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, Matt, were you a reader of Lobo back in the day, or?
I really wasn't, and part of it was just because, to me, even when I was, I don't know, I was probably in my 20s when Lobo started getting really popular, I was just kind of like, you know, this doesn't really appeal to me all that much. It was obviously an over-the-top, kind of crazy sort of satire story, but again, you know, I really wasn't that into it. And I'm looking at these right now, I'm looking at the covers for the first miniseries.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Lobo's, well, it's called Lobo. The first issue was 99 cents. There weren't, yeah, as far as I can see, there weren't any mature readers labels on any. Oh, well, actually, yeah. First one, the first issue, one of these issues that I'm looking at here, it's Lobo's Back,
yeah,
number one.
And it's actual series.
It says strongly suggested for mature readers.
Ah.
In very big letters in a green bubble.
But how many miniseries was there before that as well? You've got the paramilitary Christmas special where he kills Santa Claus.
That is true.
Fun track from the Easter Bunny. I think that one might
I'm looking at it right now. It says in the corner, seriously suggested for mature readers.
Okay.
Oh, and by the way, the live action version of that I think you could find on YouTube, yeah, is one of the best things I've ever watched.
I've got it linked on my blog.
Actually, you know, that also on the Christmas special, it has a blurb on the cover that says, "Warning, contains bad taste in the form of ultra-violence, icon bashing, and the finger." more offensive than Christmas usually is.
That's the reason that I bought it when I was younger.
I wouldn't be shocked if that's why you picked it up, because that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why I picked up certain things when I was a kid. But hey, I mean, well, he got away with a lot, because I mean, you know, by using alien versions of curses, you know, as opposed to having to just, you know, have the dollar sign exclamation point thing going on, he was able to say, you know, bastich. Yeah. is an expression these days amongst some comic book fans, you know. Or frag and bastich and mook and a couple other things that came out of that. That was just, literally, you're reading it thinking to yourself, wow, they got away with way too much here. That was Lobo.
Yeah, I'm looking at the cover for issue number 3 of the ongoing series, and it has Lobo stabbing an alien with the actual logo for the title of the book. So he grabs the word Lobo from the top and is stabbing a guy with it.
Oh, my Lord. Well, that's literally being over the top.
Can't get any better than that.
That's brilliant right there. Hey, well, that's interaction right there. That's all it is. Knowing your surroundings and using them for good use. Amen to that. You guys want to touch quickly on Dark Horse before we wrap things up? Because, I mean, Dark Horse in itself is pretty much a mature line, even though they do like the movie, the licenses and all that. Most of their titles do lean towards the mature audiences.
Well, most of the smaller publishers and most of the indie publishers, they don't have the exposure to the mainstream audience,
yeah,
really. And so I think that most of them, just from the get-go, publish more mature books, more things that are going to appeal to the person in the comic shop. A lot of those, too, a lot of independent books are a little more personal, a little more dealing with deeper kind of or heavier issues. So it makes sense.
To a point, at least. I mean, it would probably be a good idea to at least get some of the kids into something. You know, I mean, because well, hey, quite frankly, if all you're going is mature, eventually we're not going to be around to buy comics. And then there's going to be a whole bunch of kids who didn't grow up on comics because there's nothing for them to read, where, you know, all these independents and even the mainstream books, well, what the hell's going to get them in?
Yeah, that was always my joke. You know, eventually we're going to get comics aimed at the 50 and 60-year-olds where Clark Kent gets prostate cancer or...
Geriatric man.
Batman loses his hair.
Machine.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh,
Bruce Wayne goes for a toupee.
It's Batman versus the evil, the kidney.
Exactly.
Oh, jeez. We got to get kids involved somehow. And you know what? If they just did a couple more books and just maybe some marketing campaigns or something, then maybe we would be able to get them. But, hey, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens with that, really. So, any final thoughts here on the world of maturity before we wrap things up and go on to our final segment?
Well, you know what? Again, our comics for kids... Yes and no, because kids are certainly buying a lot of comics these days. They're just not buying American comics.
Yeah.
So can you blame Marvel and DC for ignoring them? I don't know. I think that, again, aiming at the adult audience makes sense in the short term. Ignoring the new generations of readers seems kind of silly in the long term. So what's going to happen? I don't know. Once we start getting into our old age, I don't know if this industry is... going to have a lot of legs left.
Any final thoughts from you, Damien?
Well, mature stuff is really what got me into it. And that's sort of, I can see, you know, it's the allure of something you can't have. That's the way I sort of look at it. Even though you shouldn't read it, people are going to read it. If parents can't sort of decide to keep things away, it's, you know, that's going to happen. There are titles out there for kids. There's not many, unfortunately. But, you know, it's, you know, as the teenagers are, they want the things that they can't have. So I think that's really why they've gone that way.
Yeah. Well, hey, I mean, I've got one final thought to say myself, and that's DC and Marvel are doing some things right. Teen Titans has never been better, and it's actually drawing in a lot of folks into it who were maybe into Teen Titans Go, who might have then decided to pick up the regular Teen Titans comic. As long as they keep doing Teen Titans right, then you're going to get at least some teenagers involved. Runaways is doing the job for Marvel, where it's actually bringing in a lot of folks who would be reading manga regularly, but, you know, due to the art style of Runaways, you're pretty much bridging a gap right there. You've got a manga-esque style and a damn good comic book, and people will be drawn to that. There's a reason why Runaways sells out as often as they do, and, you know, they finally caught on to that, both kids and adults alike. So as long as there are at least some comics around that bridge the gap, that get kids involved along with the older readers, then comic books will be able to stay around. But if they decide to completely ignore the kids, then, well, hey, we might be looking at a dead genre someday. I certainly hope that doesn't happen, but at least we still have some books around that kids and teenagers and adults alike can enjoy.
Prepare yourself for an in-depth look at all your favorite villains, one villain at a time. It is the Rogues Gallery with the man down under himself, Damien Smith. Here now, the Rogues Gallery.
All right, well, we're done with the main topic here, but before we wrap things up here on this episode of Comic Timing, well, Damien's got a brand new segment that he is going to be premiering, which will be about monthly here, and it is known as Rogues Gallery, and the first rogue he is going to be tackling is a guy that I'm sure everybody pretty much knows, and actually fits pretty well into the violence category, and that, of course, is Deathstroke. I wanted to ask you, what do you think it is exactly that draws people to Deathstroke? I mean, is it just that he's just so freaking badass that people just basically
I think it is.
Okay.
Deathstroke to me, like, honestly, my introduction, like, I'd read bits and pieces with Deathstroke in it, but my main thing that I saw quite a lot of him in it was the Teen Titans cartoon.
Okay.
Which was just the matter, I think the main thing was Ron Perlman doing the voice, but it was just such a good character.
Hey, you get Ron Perlman to do anything and it's bound to be good, so.
Oh, yeah. City of Lost Children, one of the best movies ever.
Exactly. They made the right choice there. So, Damien? The floor is yours.
Okay, then. Well, first up, I just wanted to mention, yeah, this is something I just came up with the idea of. We're going to just look at the histories of the characters, where they've been, what they've done, where they started. So, first one being Deathstroke, DC Comics, of course, as most people know. First appearance actually was in the New Teen Titans in 1980, issue 2, created by Marv Wolfman and George Perez. Power-wise, he doesn't have that much. He's when he was in the army, he actually was taken as a test student for truth serum experiment that he was involved with. And from that, he actually gained a regenerative ability. He had heightened senses and reflexes, and he actually improved his mental capacity. So he's actually able to use 90% of his brain, which is something that helps with his tacticians and stuff like that.
Yeah, is that pretty much like the super soldier in Marvel, only that's like the evil version?
Yeah, that's the way it sort of seemed to be done, that they were doing it. So
okay, that works.
Now, basically, he lied about his age to get in the army when he was younger.
That sounds just like Steve Rogers.
Yeah, distinguishing himself as one of the youngest decorated soldiers. He actually met his wife through the actual training facility, where she was the first person to actually be able to beat him, which is just what you always want to do, be married to someone who can beat you.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm looking for in a woman, hell yeah.
And shortly afterwards, gave birth to his first son, Grant. Then he went off, left the army, and became Deathstroke the Terminator. Sort of
awesome.
Without actually any of his family knowing, and was taking jobs on the side, basically. As he was going around as the Deathstroke, the president from Korak assigned a terrorist known as the Jackal to find Slade, who's, you know, Deathstroke, if those who don't know, and kidnapped his 5-year-old son, Joseph. As always, there was a bit of a standoff. Slade had to actually make it known to his wife that he actually was Deathstroke. And his wife and himself, as dressed as Deathstroke, went after the Jackal and confronted him. Slade refused to actually give the information to him because it would violate the code of, you know, his personal code.
Yeah.
And also the fact that he thought that he could actually get to his son before the Jackal did. Unfortunately, one of the Jackal's men began to slit his son's throat, and just afterwards he got to him, but Joseph was, from then on, basically mute.
Oh, boy. If we know anything, you do not mess with Deathstroke, especially to that point. So I'm sure those people did not really last much longer after that happened.
No, I don't think any of them actually did. But his wife actually thought it went the wrong way, that he should have actually just given the information and make sure his son got out intact. She actually went after her own husband with a gun.
Wow.
And from that, that is why you find out that Slade actually is blind in one eye. She shot him.
Wow. So an episode of Cops, basically.
Oh, yeah. You just see them, they're dragging her out, and you see going, but I love you.
Oh, hell yeah.
So she then actually divorced him and left with the two sons. And, yeah, basically took him out of the picture. Joseph actually went off into arts and whatnot, and her other son, Grant, sort of decided to follow in the footsteps and attended military school, which sort of, put him on his path.
A very military-esque family, to say the least.
Oh, yes. A few years later, Slade met Lillian Worth, and soon after had a daughter who most people know as Rose, who's now known as Ravager.
In
the Teen Titans, yeah. She's actually the third Ravager, if I remember correctly. Yes, she is, actually. But that's actually coming up a bit later on. Later on, Slade actually refused a job giving him the contract of the Teen Titans, since we're just speaking about it. He refused it, but his son, Grant, decided to actually do it himself. And that was where Grant became the first Ravager. He then basically destroyed himself over doing it, and Slade decided that the Titans were going to be his target. He was going to honor his son's contract on it.
So pretty much from what I'm learning about him already is the fact that he's a very fractured man, that he just keeps losing the things in his life, and that's one of the reasons why he basically became what he became. I mean, he was just a contracted killer at first, but now you can understand why he hates the Titans so much. I mean, he already lost his son to him.
Yep, lost his family due to other people, and it's just, continuous downward slope that keeps happening to him.
Exactly.
Now, next thing that sort of happened was the Jews contract. This is where he came in, and as most people know, you had Tara Markov, who actually met up with and actually had a relationship with. A lot of people didn't like the fact that she was 16 and he was 50, but...
Skeevy.
Oh, yes. He actually managed, with her help, actually getting her in with the Titans, she actually managed to give Hive Dick Grayson, or Nightwing as he was then. Dick Grayson was actually managed to infiltrate Hive themselves with the help of Joseph, who is now known as Jericho. So he actually got, you know, Dick Grayson into the other side. They in turn rescued the Titans. Terra died in the concept. For those who haven't read the Judas Contract, I'm sorry for doing that to you, but...
I'd say it's kind of old news at this point. Oh, yeah. old spoilers are not the sort of spoilers that we need to worry too much about. But if we did just ruin your life, then I humbly apologize for that.
And Slade was actually captured afterwards and put forward to stand trial, which then his case was thrown out of court because the prosecutor failed to prove that he actually did any of the kidnapping himself. So it's one of the good things going for him. He actually managed to get out of there. But then Changeling or Beast Boy or whatever you want to call him actually sabotaged the trial trying to destroy him. So Slade showed up not actually dressed as the Terminator himself, but as just in normal clothes. If he shows himself just as a man, sort of might aid to his cause.
Well, he is the total strategist, to say the least. And I mean, the fact that he can use that much of his brain, I'm pretty sure he realized that, you know, maybe coming as a guy, they'll sympathize with me a little better than if I was dressed in this outfit with, you know, flashy colors and all that.
Also, if they don't realize it's him, it might be even better.
Exactly.
But he's actually worked with them and away from them as well. There was actually members of the Teen Titans who were captured by the Wildebeest Society. Deathstroke was instrumental in tracking them down and helping them get away, which was sort of a change of tone from him. I think it was mainly the fact that for them to find out that Joseph himself was the one who was leading the guys that captured the Titans. So... I'd hate to be at their Christmas table.
It is a very, very, very soap opera-ish. I mean, I can imagine the slapping and the machete waving and everything going on at that, man. Wow. No Thanksgiving for them.
Actually, they might have had the traditional Thanksgiving from what I've seen of some people over there.
Whoa, ho, ho. Hey now.
They're over there. Don't worry about it.
That's fine. With Slade also, I think he pretty much proved at that point that unless he has a contract out for you, then, you know, he's not going to go out of his way to try and ruin your life or try and kill you. I mean, the contract was completed, and that's the end of that.
Yes, so there is a distinct honor with him.
Yeah, definitely.
Know, he's a killer, but there is honor. Now, there was actually, seems there was tainted souls of something called Azarath, which were regaining their strength by merging with Jericho, or Joseph, whichever you'd like to call him. And during the transfer, Jericho recently resurfaced, actually, when he had souls transferring, begging his father to kill him. He was beyond help, and killing him might destroy the twisted soul that was inside him. To spare his son any more pain and save the remaining Titans, Slade was forced to drive a sword through Jericho, seemingly to kill him. First one dies trying to kill the Titans, the second one gets killed by his own father.
That has got to suck. And Jericho recently showed up, actually, at the beginning of Jeff John's most recent run with the Titans. Actually, well, we pretty much learned that his soul survived that whole ordeal. And
jumped into his father's body.
Exactly. which right away is, like, totally messed up, because you're thinking about it. The father kills him, and, well, what does he do? He inhabits the father.
Yeah. And from there, in turn, kills off his best friend and gets still as twisted as possible.
messed up world. Deathstroke lives.
After that, he sort of took a bit of a break and went off hunting. And, yeah, as you said, he turned back up in Teen Titans. Jericho actually ended up, you know, confronting them as Deathstroke, actually trying to take them out himself. Jericho's the one who caused Deathstroke to actually shoot Impulse, and as they kill Wintergreen, and yeah, basically, from when he was found out, he ended up jumping through the bodies of the different Titans until he was repelled by Raven and eventually trapped by a cyborg's mechanical eye. So currently, from what I've found out, he's actually on a computer disk somewhere.
Yeah, he's actually you could actually get him on DVD now. Now, that would be an interesting thing. Like, yeah, hey, wow, I just got Jericho on DVD. Dude, yeah. Why are you looking at me like that?
Wonder what sort of rating that would be.
If they could do like a quadruple X, then that would probably be it.
Yeah, Slade then vowed to destroy his son and exact vengeance on Raven, who he blamed for Jericho's current state, and he recruited a new ally to forge as a weapon into his crusade, his last remaining child, Rose. He kidnapped her and pumped her full of the same chemicals that transformed him into Deathstroke, so that wonderful truth serum that they used. Also, the chemicals damaged her mind, and in an attempt to emulate her father, she actually gouged her own eye out. So,
what a happy, happy family.
Oh, yes. And, yeah, she's currently actually off with the Titans, and Slade's found himself once more alone. Also, recently he took a contract to take out the mayor of Star City.
Who does that happen to be?
Oh, it's a little-known person called Oliver Queen.
never heard of him.
Never heard of him, yeah, otherwise known as Green Arrow. And the last we actually saw of him, for those who haven't read it, don't listen, but the last we saw of him, he was actually trapped in a ring of National Guardsmen with a Green Arrow after a fight. So he was taken away under arrest, and that's all we know of him of late.
Now, gee, I wonder how long he's actually going to stay in jail.
I think it's going to be as long as he wants it to be.
Exactly. Now, before we wrap things up with the segment here, I got to ask you also, what do you think about his involvement as of late with the Secret Society of Supervillains? There we go, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what do you think about his involvement?
Well, he was one of the founding members of it. Made a deal with Nightwing to actually try to keep the metahumans out of Bloodhaven, so just to show him that he meant business, they dropped chemo. So, you know, I think, well, for his point of view, it would have been a good point. You know, he's got the people around him that he could use for his own advantage.
Exactly. And you also, you want to talk badass? He is the only guy who has ever, and I mean ever, fooled anybody into believing that he was Batman. This is giving away a bit of a story point here, but this was actually a little while back. This was even before Infinite Crisis. So if I'm spoiling anything for you out there, if you haven't read Outsiders and you want to read Outsiders, skip this point here. But Arsenal was getting their missions from someone who he believed to have been Batman. And eventually Nightwing goes to Batman and tells him, you know, enough is enough. I really don't want you doing this anymore. And Batman turns to him and says, what the hell are you talking about? And it turned out that this guy who Arsenal was getting the missions from was not Batman. It was Deathstroke. So they're pretty much one and two in the realm of tactics and in the realm of basic intelligence at this point, because, well, nobody knows more about style and about strategy than Batman, and number two would be Deathstroke.
I wonder what's going to happen if they ever come up against each other. That would be interesting.
I don't even want to know, but I doubt there would be many people left involved in that situation.
I'd like to see if they actually ended up facing each other.
That would be great. just like have the two of them like face off, and also Deathstroke also being so popular, he had his own book for a while. Also,
75 issues, and 4 specials, and special issue 0.
Wow, wow, that just says right there just how popular he was. Because how many villains do you see who have a series that lasts that long?
Not many that I have seen, actually.
Exactly.
Yeah,
other than that, let's see. What else was there? Well, yeah, also, just for amusement's sake, they say that, and again, this is completely up to debate, as it's on Wikipedia, and obviously nothing on Wikipedia is 100% confirmed, but they say that the character of Deadpool is loosely based on Deathstroke.
Yeah, so. I read that as well, but also I read that the Taskmaster is also very similarly based, just for the fact that Perez, in the same year, changed companies.
Okay.
And they actually wear the same sort of clothes. Oh, there was a slight difference in their clothing. There was
And but a lot of their powers were actually very similar.
Well, there you go. Yeah, actually, and Taskmaster is basically, well, but his name is Taskmaster, and that's what he is, basically, a Taskmaster. Mm-hmm. He can get the, he knows pretty much the exact fighting style of almost everybody in the Marvel U, and can throw a shield almost as good as Captain America. So, that's what he's going with there. So, you can pretty much compare the two very, very easily. Yeah.
And, yeah, it was within the same year that when that they were actually created. It was actually months within each other, so...
Well, there you go. That's what happens when people jump shift. They take their characters with them, even if they don't take their characters with them. Well, there you have it with Deathstroke. So, I believe we have a successful first-ever Rogues Gallery, so...
If anyone has anyone that they want to see done, post it on the forums. We can email comictiming@gmail.com.
Exactly.
I'll get it after that.
Exactly. And as he just mentioned, well, as Damien just mentioned, we've got a post on the forums, actually, about villains. Do you have a favorite villain? I'm going to morph that into the post for the Rogues Gallery. And we have a couple of villains that have already been mentioned there, and I'll actually make it a sticky on the forum, so anybody who does want to post who they want us to cover, well, then we will certainly try and do our best to cover that. So, hey, it's been a successful Rogues Gallery number one as part of this Comic Timing number 16, so... Good job, my friend, and let the nerves out of your system, and hopefully now that your comic timing / podcasting hymen has been broken, you'll be a little bit more relaxed the next time around.
Not a problem.
All right, well, Damien, that was very insightful, and I very much enjoy villains, as does Matt, I'm sure, so we'll certainly be having you back in the future to do these, probably about once a month. So, first of all, Damien, thank you very kindly for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
Yep,
glad
thank
to be
you.
Here.
And you can find Damien's work and a whole lot more over at LordShaper.com, affiliate of the show, graciously. And, well, hey, a lot of great comic news coming out of there and gaming news and all that, so plenty of great stuff over there. And I want to thank the regular Matt S. for joining us, as always. So, Matt, thank you kindly, dude.
Madam Usel's the secret.
Madam Usel, exactly.
Now, anyway, yeah, thanks for having me. I'm having a good time. And catch you later.
All right, awesome. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicgeekspeak.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys. Don't forget to vote for us over at Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. The iTunes feed is officially fixed, so if you find us on iTunes under Comic Timing and probably resubscribe just to be on the safe side, you will be able to download all the episodes of Comic Timing. The link is still the same, and it's on the Comic Timing page at speakgeekspeak.com/comic timing. And don't forget to send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes, as they are graciously accepted there. And also, once again, visit LordShaper.com. And I'm pretty much sure that's all it. So, once again, Damien and Matt, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And as always, there's always time for comics. All right, great. Excellent. So, Matt, I'll talk to you next week, man, all right?
Okay, take it easy, you guys.
All right, get some sleep.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right, go back to work. I love it here. It's 2:30 here in the afternoon.
Well, I spent the last 2.5 months sleeping until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, usually.
But, oh, man.
Yeah, I have to actually go back to work today, so.
Beautiful.
Not a good
all right,
idea.
Well. Enjoy work. Enjoy work, buddy.
It would be a good... Yeah, if you read my Skype tag, teaching would be a great job if it weren't for all the students.
Amen to that, man.
All right, man. I'll see you guys.
Go kick some ass. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Comic Timing and plenty other great comic book podcasts are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcasts.com.